Welcome to Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and some parts of the East African region on this Monday, August 5th, 2024. Health workers in Eastern Equatorial State say teenage pregnancies is causing distress to young mothers.
The obstructed labor, when it is not early diagnosed, it will result into fistula. Fistula, in most cases, it affects the young girls purposely because she's not fully developed in her body.
And South Sudan's national men's basketball team are knocked out of the Olympic Games.
The game was fair. I just wanted to win, for us to win, but it has ended that way. But there's no problem. Next time is there. We can win.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Midwives at Torit State Hospital say they are handling cases of teenage pregnancies leading to health issues like obstructed labor and vulnerability to fistula, mental and physical distress. The health workers say the complications can cause damage to teenage mothers across Eastern Equatorial State. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
KG Rose Philip is a midwife in charge of the maternity ward at Torit State Hospital. She says cases of teenage pregnancies are becoming all too common at the hospital. She says most teenage mothers develop complications during childbirth.
The obstructed labor, when it is not early diagnosed, it will result into fistula. Fistula, in most cases, it affects the young girls purposely because she's not fully developed in her body and she's carrying a pregnancy, and most of the time they have fear of coming to the hospital.
Mary Mania, an administrator and midwife at Torit State Hospital, says the hospital receives many young pregnant girls aged 17 and below.
In a year, like for example, the 2023, we receive almost 161 in total. From April and June, it was higher, this is 60. But the rest of the month, like from January up to March, they are less, they are 40. Then from November and December, they are only 30, they are few. But mostly in April and June, these are the pregnancies which occur during the holiday time.
Elder Amo is the parent of 15-year-old Ayo, whom we shall refer to by her first name only because of privacy. Ayo was diagnosed with an ectopic pregnancy, a condition which the fetus develops outside the uterus, typically in a fallopian tube. Amo urges parents to take care of their daughters at home to prevent teenage pregnancies.
The current life now are all because of phones. You will not know how they date and get pregnant as a mother, but you will be surprised she is pregnant. Mothers should keep their eyes on their girls, and if you are able to maintain your child, you maintain her in a good way. If you have a girl child in your family, don't abuse her. Even if she did a mistake, don't abuse her.
Jola Esther, a cook at the traffic police office in Torit, says she gave birth when she was 13 years. She says she regrets getting pregnant at such a young age and will now focus on her future.
I was a kid. I didn't know how to hold a baby or even to take care of her. I would sleep and forget the baby. The baby will cry, but I would not mind. All the burden was on my mother. She would be the one to wake me up so I can breastfeed the baby. She sleep with us in the room, so she can't take care of both of us. I could not take care of the child because I was also a child. With what I have seen in life, if I was to put effort to finish my school, it would be good.
Matthew Oduma Avoro is a chief at Torit B Court for marital issues. He says he receives many cases of young girls who become pregnant. Oduma says he was trained on the law of South Sudan regarding early and forced marriages. He says he can now handle such cases with a fair amount of wisdom.
Such cases used to come to us very, very many before we got training on the laws. These days, if a girl is brought to this B court who is pregnant and below 18 years, I take the report to the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare in the ministry, and from there, ministry will file a case because such a child may have complication during delivery.
Statistics on early pregnancy in Eastern Equatorial State are high largely because of poverty and cultural norms, which allows early and forced marriages in rural parts of the state. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
Still on health matters, a community of breastfeeding women in Uganda is helping mothers who are struggling not to just feed their newborn babies, but to keep them alive. Halima Athumani and Mukasa Francis reports from Uganda's capital, Kampala.
In March, complications with Mbabazi Rusty's pregnancy led doctors to perform an emergency cesarean section and deliver her child at 36 weeks, about a month early. Rusty then suffered a cardiac arrest and was placed on life support. During recovery, she could not breastfeed her baby, and so the hospital was substituting formula.
He was given powdered milk, but unfortunately, he faced a condition called NEC stage 1, whereby he wouldn't digest the powdered milk well.
Rusty reached out to the Atta breast milk community, and the baby started getting breast milk from a donor. Rachel Akujiziwe is the administrator at Atta breast milk community. She says the organization was started in 2021 by a mother whose recently born child passed away.
Because she had a supply, she asked the doctors, where do I put the milk? They told her, all we can do for you is to give you a tablet to dry it up. She said, but you see, I needed it. Meaning, there should be a mother or so, a baby who needs the breast milk.
The breast milk is from mothers who have babies between 0 to 6 months old, but it's not easy to become a donor. Akujiziwe says donating mothers can't be on drugs and must undergo blood tests.
The blood work that we do, we check for HIV, we check for hepatitis, we check for syphilis, we check for CMV. They are screened before they start donating, you know, this milk.
Sadia Hussein Mlangwa is a mother of two and found her body was producing more milk than her babies needed. That is how she learned about the breast milk community and says she is a committed donor.
The fulfillment that I will get from this, knowing that I'm saving a life somewhere or giving better health or just a better living to a helpless child. I'm like, what bigger sadaka is there than that, really?
The Atta breast milk community says they have helped over 500 babies over the past 3 years, providing 800 liters of milk from close to $150. Halima Athmani, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
From health issues, we go to politics, where Nigerian President Bola Tinubu has called for a suspension of protest by young men and women, asking them to give room for dialogue. Young adults in Nigeria started 10 days of protest against the government policies they blame for high cost of living. Lagos lawyer and public affairs analyst Matthew Izuko tells reporter Mike Bonye about the president did not address the core demands of the young men and women. He says they want immediate solutions to hunger and high cost of living in the country.
Honestly speaking, as a lawyer and as a public affairs analyst, I cannot fathom anything in that broadcast as far as it boils down to the reason why the strike was called upon.
In the broadcast, President Tinubu defended his administration's policies. especially the removal of fuel subsidies and the abolition of multiple foreign exchange systems. And these are some of the key points that made the youths to go on protest. Your reaction to that aspect of the broadcast?
Okay, on the issue of removal of subsidy, first of all, I term it as a scam, this issue of subsidy they said they have removed. Because we were told on the first day he assumed office, the first broadcast he made, that fuel subsidy would make availability of fuel to Nigerians. But today, we all know, in no filling station, they don't fuel. So if you are removing subsidies to enable us get fuel at a competitive price, then still there is no fuel anywhere. So there is nothing like fuel subsidy. I have reason, people have been clamoring that the fuel subsidy is a scam, and I want to toe that same line. There is nothing like fuel subsidy, because they are, all these are just scams, just to deceive Nigerians.
But in the broadcast, the president said that these policy decisions are aimed at, that they are necessary for economic revival and survival of the country.
This is 14 months to his administration. We thought by now Nigerians should be jubilating and be happy concerning all those indices to show that, yes, the economy is getting revived. But as of today, and the reason why the people, the youth, and bad governance, the reason why they went on the street is because of the hardship in the country. If they are sincere, I mean the government, if they are sincere to themselves, by now, we should have been seeing, even if it is not immediate, element of improvement in the economy, such as fuel availability, the prices of foodstuffs. Today, the prices of foodstuffs are skyrocketing. The masses cannot even buy anything again. 10,000 naira is worth nothing in the market. How much is the income of civil servant? It's just increasing to 70,000 naira.
The youths said they are going to continue with the end to bad governance protest, despite the call by the president, or in fact the plea by the president, that they should suspend the protest, and that, I quote the president, "I've heard you loud and clear. I understand the pain and frustration that drive the protests. Government is committed to listening and addressing the concerns of our citizens." What, in your opinion, do you think should, or what should government do to make the youth end this protest now and, you know, bring smiles on the faces of the people?
I thought the president is going to broadcast, in my mind today, that every government official should not travel abroad for medical checkup. No government official should use private jet. No government official should use business class. These are to show the masses that, yes, you are really out to salvaging the situation.
That's Lagos lawyer and public affairs analyst Matthew Izoku talking to reporter Mike Bonye about the protests in Nigeria against high cost of living. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, basketball fans in South Sudan were shocked to see Serbia beating the Bright Star. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudan's basketball team, the Bright Star, are packing to go home after Serbia beat the country's men's Olympic basketball team 96-85 on Saturday. Some fans who watched the game at a gymnasium in Juba say they are hopeful the team will win in the next Olympic Games. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi was at Nimratalata Gymnasium and reports from the capital, Juba.
Serbia's 11-point win eliminated South Sudan from the Olympics. South Sudan needed either a win or a loss of less than 3 points to have moved to the next stage. South Sudanese basketball fans who spoke before the game were optimistic that the men's national basketball team would defeat Serbia in the game on Saturday, but that hope did not come true. Kizito Joseph was at the gymnasium at Nimratalata looking forward to a South Sudan win.
What we are expecting is a win. This is the most important thing that we all want, for us just to win. But I'm sure these guys will make us proud. I trust them. We've watched their previous games on their friendlies. Though we lost the last game with America, it was fine though, but we had some slight mistakes. But I'm sure we are going to correct them all, and these guys will make us proud.
Sheba Quintos, another basketball fan, says she was not surprised by the Serbian team's performance.
I just came here to support my nation as a South Sudanese girl, so I'm be proud of them. So I wish them success to win the game, but the loser is the winner. When we are here, we are just expecting like they will win the game or they will lose the game.
As the pressure mounted during the second quarter, South Sudan supporters went mute as Serbia continued to hit three-point shots. Adao Makwei's hopes of victory faded.
The game was fair. I just wanted to win, for us to win, but it has ended that way. But there's no problem. Next time is there. We can win. What if we lose? We are still a South Sudanese by ourselves. You can win today and you can lose today. Next time is there. Let them come home and they will do better next time.
Simon Alor, a Bright Star diehard, couldn't control his tears after the last whistle. He says despite the loss, the Olympics game has positioned South Sudan, which has been an independent country for just 13 years, on the world map.
We really feel sorry, but we still have hope. We don't take this as something serious because our boys went far. It is not easy to reach where we reach. It takes for some African countries or some world to reach. It takes for them very many years to reach at where we reach. But for us, only 13 years. We met our names in the world. So I'm very happy. Though we lost, we remain the chance of the Africa, the chance of the Nile, the bright stars. We still have that hope that next time better. Today we lose, but next time we'll go for another game. So we'll win and we'll come back with the medals in South Sudan.
Another fan who only identified herself as Priscilla says South Sudanese should be appreciative and rally to support the team.
The boys played well, though they lose, and that's how game is. Either there's a loser and a winner. So we can't blame them why they lose the game. We have to appreciate them. We have to support them. For them, they made us proud. For the first time, South Sudan won the Olympics. That is something very good. We really appreciate them, and we are happy for them.
Achuel Bangol, a basketball veteran, says people should not lose hope because the Olympic game was an eye-opener. He says Lol Deng, president of the South Sudan Basketball Federation, tried his best for basketball to thrive in the country.
Lul is doing a lot. He's not only supporting the national team, but he has already established nationwide basketball clinic. So in 5 years' time, it is not only players from abroad that are going to be playing, but also South Sudanese. And we might even influx a lot. We will send a lot of youngsters to basketball sport scholarship. Already my son, whom I was training, and he was trained under Lul, the foundation is in U.S. now. He's playing Division I basketball. And this is what I wouldn't afford, even if I have a lot of money like what in Africa.
Division 1 is the top level of university sports in the United States. Lual Deng and assistant coach Royal Ivy were not pleased with the outcome of the game, and they accused the referees of using different standards for the Bright Stars. Serbia qualified for the knockout round in Paris and will face Australia on Tuesday. South Sudan's elimination gives a chance for Greece to advance, since it had a better point differential than South Sudan over three group stage games. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move back to the United States, where Western partners and Jordan are telling their citizens to leave Lebanon. This
as Washington deploys additional military to the Middle East in posturing the White House describes as defensive fears of an Iranian military strike on Israel. VOA's Arish Arabsati reports.
U.S. warships and fighter jets are on their way to the Middle East to deter an all-out war and, in quote, defense of Israel.
The Pentagon is moving significant assets to the region to prepare for what may be another need to defend Israel from an attack, while simultaneously we are working very hard to de-escalate this situation diplomatically, because we do not believe that a regional war is in anyone's interest in the current moment, and that is something that we've been trying to avoid since October 7th.
The show of military might comes amid rapidly soaring tensions in the region following the assassination of top Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran last week, and a rocket strike on Israel's Golan Heights area that killed a dozen children on a soccer field days before. Israel blamed the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah for the attack and struck what it said were Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. A Hezbollah commander was killed. Both Hamas and Hezbollah are backed by Iran.
Hezbollah's ongoing aggression and brutal attacks are dragging the people of Lebanon and the entire Middle East into a wider escalation, while we prefer to resolve hostilities without a wider war. The IDF is fully prepared for any scenario.
But in Beirut, on footage carried by the Hezbollah-controlled Al-Manar TV, Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah denied the group's involvement.
We categorically deny our responsibility of this incident, and we have the courage to take responsibility if we bomb the place, even by mistake.
Despite the finger-pointing, there are real-world consequences for people living in the region. Israel's Iron Dome air defense system triggered over the weekend to intercept attacks from across the border in Lebanon. And with military reinforcements on the way, the State Department issued a do not travel advisory for Lebanon, encouraging U.S. citizens to depart. Arash Arabsati, VOA News.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is reportedly narrowing down her choices for a running mate in the 2024 presidential race. Her new vice presidential pick will join her at a campaign event Tuesday in Pennsylvania, while former President Donald Trump took to social media to make his case on why there should be a change in venue and date for the next presidential debate. VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias has the report.
Anticipation is growing about who U.S. Vice President and Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris will choose as her running mate in the 2024 presidential race. Top contenders include Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, and U.S. Senator Mark Kelly. Duke University political scientist John Green told VOA via Skype that the VP selection will be the U.S. voters' first impression of Harris's judgment as the potential 47th president of the United States.
And it signals a lot about her and her priorities and her approach to governing in terms of who she would put in her stead if for any reason she were not able to discharge her duties as president.
Harris plans to tour several battleground states with her VP pick, starting Tuesday in Pennsylvania. The Trump campaign is also expected to continue investing time and energy in states that could decide the outcome of the November general election. Analyst John Green via Skype.
This time around, states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona are both relatively large and seen as being particularly competitive.
As the U.S. electorate awaits the Democratic VP announcement, there's also renewed interest on whether Harris will debate her political rival and former president Donald Trump. The Republican presidential nominee argues that now that President Joe Biden dropped out of the race, The original presidential debate, scheduled for September 10th on ABC, should be replaced by a Fox News one in Pennsylvania in early September with a live audience. On Saturday, Trump wrote on his Truth social media platform, quote, "I'll see her on September 4th, or I won't see her at all." The Harris campaign has been adamant they should stick to the original debate plan.
Well, Donald, you'll reconsider to meet me on the debate stage. Because as the saying goes, if you've got something to say, say it to my face.
Whether Harris and Trump will come face to face remains to be seen. But former President Trump will have a new opportunity to make his case against Harris and her new running mate when he rallies in Bozeman, Montana on August 9th. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we had for you on our menu for this Monday, August 5th, 2024. We now leave you with the song Bandeko by a group from the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Helen, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Israel responded to the recent tragic terrorist attack by Hezbollah on children and teens in the Golan Heights with a targeted missile strike in Beirut. A top Hezbollah leader, Fuad Shukr, who was responsible for the attack on the children, was killed. At a UN Security Council briefing on the situation in the Middle East, U.S. Alternative Representative for Special Political Affairs Robert Wood began with a clear statement.
Israel has a right to defend itself against attacks from Hezbollah and other terrorists. That is precisely what it did on July 30, when it independently responded to Hezbollah's July 28 attack on Majd al-Shams, which killed 12 children. There is no doubt, absolutely none, that Hezbollah was responsible for this attack, which used an Iranian weapon and was launched from a portion of Lebanon controlled by Hezbollah.
Hezbollah has repeatedly fired rockets at Israel since October 8th, with Iran's support and backing, said Ambassador Wood. And he noted Hezbollah is not the only Iranian-backed group in the region that has taken advantage of the situation in Gaza to undermine peace and security. Iran also arms and supports the Houthis, Hamas, and terrorist groups in Syria and Iraq. Ambassador Wood underscored that a broader war is neither imminent nor inevitable, although the opportunistic attacks by Iran and its network of terrorist proxies and partners across the region have repeatedly brought us closer to a regional conflict.
The United States will continue to lead the way in diplomatic efforts to end the war in Gaza and reduce regional tensions. A ceasefire agreement is the surest way to alleviate the suffering of the Palestinian people and unlock the possibility of broader stability.
We believe that there is still time and space for a diplomatic solution, said Ambassador Wood.
We encourage members of this council, with direct influence over Iran, to increase pressure on it to stop escalating its proxy conflict against Israel and other actors. Indeed, every member of this council should call on Iran to stop arming, advising, and financing terrorist groups, and to rein in the actions of proxies and partners who threaten regional peace and security.
In this dangerous moment, Ambassador Wood declared, it is imperative that we work together to reduce tensions in the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.